everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It's Friday morning, which is time for the weekend review and preview conversation, where my guests will recap how markets have performed over the past few sessions and preview what you can expect in the week ahead. Today's conversation will primarily focus on fixed income sectors and how they have performed this month. Today we are joined by Frank Saleo and Barry McElinden, Senior Fixed Income Strategists for the Americas for the UBS Chief Investment Office. Frank and Barry, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Good morning.
Frank, I'll begin with you. Can you recap some of the notable events of the past week?
Absolutely, Siobhan, and happy Friday. Happy Friday, everyone. Yeah, the big headline this week was yesterday's release of the preliminary or advanced estimate for first quarter GDP, and it came in much weaker than expected, showing an annualized quarter-over-quarter growth rate of 1.6%. This compares with the consensus estimate calling for 2.5% and the prior quarter's 3.4% pace. So overall, it was the slowest growth rate since the second quarter of 2022. At the same time, the quarterly annualized core PCE price index, which is the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, came in at 3.7% versus a 3.4% estimate and 2% for the prior quarter. And this morning, we see that that includes core PCE for March rising 2.8% year over year versus an estimate for 2.7. So if we take these things together, they began yesterday morning to spark some renewed concerns over stagflation, with growth slowing sharply but inflation remaining high. But as the market took a step back and looked more closely at the GDP report, it shows a number of details that suggest a continued slowing in the economy, but not a collapse. This includes things like consumer spending component in GDP, which actually rose by a pretty solid 2.5%. Additionally, another reason for the weaker GDP measure was a surge in imports, which is actually a detraction from the GDP total. But again, it reflects strong consumer demand. So overall, the data is consistent with an economy that is slowing along a bumpy glide path. And it is important to remember that just a few weeks ago, the prevailing concern was for a so-called no landing scenario, as opposed to a soft landing or hard landing, a no landing scenario of economic resurgence based on the strong labor market trends we've seen this year and other economic indicators. But yesterday's GDP report mitigates some of that concern. On the other hand, the PCE inflation data yesterday and this morning does seem to add to a more consistent trend of persistent inflation. The turning point for that market narrative was probably the April 10th release of the March CPI inflation data, which was higher than expected for the third consecutive month. The higher than expected figures in January and February thought to be more related to some seasonal factors possibly, but with March's CPI data, it seems to suggest more of a persistent trend. And since that release on April 10th of the March CPI inflation data, yields on both the 5- and 10-year Treasury rates are up by 35 basis points. They're up 35 basis points since then, just over the past, let's call it 2 weeks or so. They both closed at 470 yesterday, the highest levels of the year. So those were some of the major stories in the market backdrop that investors were focused on this week. But earnings were another major part of the investment backdrop this week. For that part, I'll turn it over to Barry.
Thanks, Frank. I would add that, you know, the announcements from two large mega cap tech companies yesterday also helped, you know, restore a bit of confidence in the growth outlook, you know, which had been shaken by the GDP report, you know, as you mentioned. So overall, you know, earnings are coming in, I think, in, you know, alleviating some of these concerns, you know, kind of living up or even exceeding expectations coming into this earnings season. Consensus thought, you know, revenues would grow by about 3% and earnings by 5.3%. It looks like by the time the earnings season's over, we're actually going to see earnings grow by about 7 to 9%, you know, based on the historical beat rates that usually take place. So, you know, definitely, you know, kind of a strong signpost there. And then if you also consider, you know, forward-looking indicators, the path ahead as far as the estimates go, The bottom-up estimates, earnings estimates for 2024 by street analysts are also tracking above historical averages. So that, you know, fundamental underpinning, is something that's very important in, you know, how we think about risk sectors and fixed income going forward.
Perfect. Both, thank you so much for that overview. So as April comes to a close, Barry, how have fixed income sectors performed so far this month?
Yeah, no doubt, given the aforementioned rise in treasury yields that Frank talked about, you know, fixed income total returns are down this month, really across the board, except in floating rate instruments like senior loans are really the only sector that are modestly positive. But if you look at, you know, all of these sectors with higher duration, they're all down. Treasury is down 2.5% month to date. We have even investment-grade corporates down 2.6% and high-yield bonds down 1.4%. So, all sectors influenced by what's going on the rates front. You know, credit spreads, though, have generally been well-behaved. Only some modest widening in the high-yield bond market. I think that's not surprising, you know, given just some of the volatility we've seen in equities and also the interest rate markets. But nothing too material. You know, we're still really near historical tight ranges as it relates to credit spread. So it's all, you know, the headwind for total returns has really all been stemming from what's going on with government bonds. And of course, you know, that's being driven by the macro data and expectations for Fed policy. But I would just say overall, even though, you know, asset classes within fixed income, you know, will show losses for the month of April, these strong underpinnings, remain intact. And maybe I'll just point out a few. For example, like in the investment grade corporate bond market, you know, that asset class continues to benefit from really strong, you know, cash flows, fund inflows at these high attractive yield levels that are about 5.8% for the IG index. So demand for investment grade, you know, remains very consistent. And the new issue supply that we've seen in that marketplace has also, you know, been on a very strong pace. And, you know, think about high yield corporate bonds where issuance again has been robust this year. But maybe importantly, about 73% of the issuance has been earmarked for refinancing. So that's allowed these companies to chip away, you know, upcoming bond maturities. So, you know, a lot of good developments underpinning the sectors and credit. Even though, of course, as I said, returns haven't fared so well.
Yeah, and I would just add, you know, when it comes to preferred stocks, which is my area of focus, we came into the quarter with valuations looking actually a little bit stretched, and that's because preferreds during the first quarter really had been surprisingly resilient in the face of generally higher trending interest rates during the first quarter. Preferreds were actually one of the best performing sectors in the first quarter with a return of nearly 5%. And when I look at preferreds, I break them down into two subsectors based on their par value, $25 par and $1,000 par. And we look, when we look at the subsectors, composing that a quarterly return of 5% in the first quarter, it consisted of a 5.2% gain for the $25 par preferreds and a 4.5% gain for the $1,000 pars. But since the start of a new quarter here, as we in April, the sharper backup in rates that I alluded to earlier and that Barry just referenced, with treasury rates up 35 basis points in about 2 weeks to the highest levels of the year, you know, preferreds are facing some headwinds, and the sector is down by about 2% this month. But I would highlight for advisors and investors listening, there are pockets of opportunity among preferred stocks, particularly among those $1,000 par preferreds that I mentioned. $1,000 par preferreds tend to have variable rate coupons. They either pay a fixed to floating rate coupon or what's called a fixed rate reset. A fixed to floating rate coupon is fixed during an initial non-call period, and then it resets every quarter if it's not called. And the fixed rate resets are coupons that reset every 5 years, based on the five-year treasury rate plus a predetermined reset spread. And these are generally providing yields of about 7% and from high-quality bank issuers too. Plus, they're typically QDI eligible, so they're tax advantaged. So those yields are even higher on a taxable equivalent basis. So definitely, Siobhan, some pockets of opportunity among preferred stocks right now, and valuations have improved somewhat, with the sector being down about 2% this month.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation. And Frank, in the light of the latest market developments at the start of the second quarter, what is CIO's overall market outlook for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, in terms of the macro backdrop at CIO, we continue to expect essentially a soft landing in the U.S. economy. Specifically, we think that the economy will slow toward trend level growth, along with continued disinflation, the latest data notwithstanding. But it will be a bumpy ride, as indicated again by the latest data. Nonetheless, this backdrop should enable the Fed to begin cutting rates later this year. And we did push out our expectations for the first rate cut from mid-year to September. We now expect the Fed to begin cutting rates in September, with another 25 basis point cut expected in December. And along with that, we expect the 10-year Treasury yield to trend lower toward 3.85% at year-end. That's our year-end target for the 10-year Treasury yield, 3.85. And all of that suggests a pretty good backdrop for fixed income. We favor quality sectors like investment-grade corporates. And as I just mentioned, we continue to see some pretty decent pockets of opportunity among preferred stocks, too. Barry?
Thanks, Frank. And just as far as market events next week, the earnings season continues to roll on. About 178 of the S&P 500 companies will report earnings next week. So really kind of peaking out in terms of earnings reporting season. It'll be a busy week also, end of April, beginning of May. On April 29th, we'll get an announcement of Treasury bond refunding. And then on May 1st, the amount that will actually be deployed across the various maturities. So that's always insightful from a Treasury bond auction perspective. And that's also the same day, May 1st, as another Fed meeting taking place. Now, we don't think this is going to be quite as impactful as the Fed meeting in June. The June meeting will have a new summary of economic projections, and especially in light of, you know, the Fed's expectations for cuts in 25 being greater than where the market is pricing, it'll be interesting to see if the Fed dots do adjust. But that won't be known until June. I think next week's Fed meeting, relatively uneventful, except, of course, as it relates to comments from Fed Chair Powell, perhaps regarding the more hawkish inflation print, that would be something interesting to keep an eye on. We also get the jobs report at the end of next week, so extremely busy, and we'll be keeping an eye on many things.
Perfect. Thank you both so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.